right, all being well, if I've got this right, I'm going to be joined right now by lawyer and investment banker turned author Freddie Peters. So, Freddie, can you hear me?
Absolutely, I hear you well. Good afternoon, Scott. Thank you for inviting me to Phoenix FM.
It's our pleasure. Now, first off, from your accent, you'll already have gathered that Freddie is not English. So you've got to tell us about your origins and just how you come to make your UK base.
Absolutely. So that is very true. I was born in a city, a little ancient town in France, between Bordeaux and Cognac. Some tourists may know it. They flock there to Angoulême in the summer because it is old and very picturesque, and as you would expect, the food is really good.
And the wine.
And the wine, absolutely right, and the wine. And even in the winter, it's been put on the international map with its comics book festival. So, yeah, it's known to certain people. But, you know, to me, it's still a very small town. It was a little bit sleepy when I was a young person. And, you know, I remember thinking that nothing really very, very much was happening there. So I could not wait to get away. So what I did first, I moved to Paris, studying law at Sorbonne. Then I moved to London to take a master's at King's College, and then I was offered a job in a law firm straight out of King's.
Right, because you spent 25 years in London, and as I say, you were at the Sorbonne, you practiced law and everything there, and how did you make the transition then into writing?
Well, transition into writing came because I first spent 25 years in the city, and I was working in a quite a harsh environment. It was, you know, it was interesting, it was fun. You know, I worked for a number of different international banks, and I travelled a lot. But you know, I can't deny that being female and a foreigner 30 years ago was really a hindrance, and it was tough. I mean, I managed to stand my ground. Not always easy, but by and large, I did it, I managed. But increasingly, though, I found that the pressure to make money at all costs no longer really aligned with my own ethical values. I mean, the square mile, you know, 30 years ago, paid attention to ethics. There was consideration for clients. But with the emergence of the large trading floors, you know, a way of making money very fast, not worrying so much about the people you're dealing with, that caused me concern. And, you know, on a trading floor, for example, you don't talk about a client, you talk about a counterparty, one of many. You know, I thought long and hard about what was happening, the changes, in particular with, the financial crisis in 2008.
Yes.
You know, it was a real watershed moment for me. I mean, I remember when I was the Merrill Lynch, you know, I was discussing a particular financial instrument and a structure associated to it. And the colleague there was either not understanding the product or not wanting to tell me the details of it. And I thought, no, it's just not, you know, it's not right. So, as I said, you know, to me, it was a real watershed moment.
Now, it can be a little surprise, I guess, that all your books to date are based on your experiences with the law and indeed the city. And surprise, surprise, your first book, Collapse, is centred on that financial crisis. Tell us more.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, so Collapse is my first book. It's also based on a main character called Henry Crown. He's a successful banker, he's a negotiator, but he's also a tortured man. Yeah, he's a man with a heavy past. Of course, no spoilers here. but you know, he's born in Belfast.
Yeah.
He has connections with the IRA. He had a childhood in Northern Ireland, which was harsh, as you might, you know, imagine during the Troubles. And in the book, he's accused of murder. And, of course, his Irish background, his terrorist connections, his stellar financial successes tilt the scales against him.
I have to ask you, is he based on someone you work with?
Not really. It's a collection of people, let's call it.
Yeah.
There's no real Henry Crown. Well, at least I don't know Henry Crown. In the city. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and then in the book, you know, I introduce other people, my other main character, a lady called Nancy Wu, she's his neighbor. You know, he doesn't know her very well to start with, but she's a QC, a Queen's Counsel. She's retired early from the bar. She's a philanthropist. And she finds affinities with Henry. So again, you know, no spoilers here. But she decides to take on the case. And the Father of the Crisis, of course, is a fantastic background and backdrop to the story that provides me with a lot of ammunition and decoys to build up the plot.
Now, as you say, we don't want to spoil the plot by saying too much more about the theme running through all your books, but they all centre on the needs to follow the money and show how it finances terrorism, greed, espionage and more. And the second book, Breaking Point, takes this further, involving an investigation that implicates the UK government, the Bank of England and London's top banking executives, yeah?
Yeah, I know, and that's very right, Scott. I mean, high finance is linked, you know, in many ways to all aspects of our lives. I mean, of course, the economy, but politics, technological advances like blockchain, cryptocurrency, cybersecurity, the arts. So, you know, there's plenty to say. I mean, in Breaking Point, I use the LIBOR scandal, which people might recall. The LIBOR scandal is an incredible scandal. I mean, it's probably the largest ever on the markets concerning a market worth $350 trillion. I mean, it's inimaginable. In fact, this was called the scandal that dwarfs by order of magnitude any financial scam in the history of markets by a gentleman called Andrew Low, an MIT professor of finance. So, you know, it's a really great topic to delve into because so many parties were involved.
And that's fact, yes.
Yeah. Sorry?
That is fact.
Absolutely fact. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the $250 trillion is absolute fact. The fact that many parties were involved is also fact. There's an excellent panorama from the BBC that was screened, I think, in 2014, which we was talking about that. But what is fascinating is that to date, the SFO, the Serious Fraud Office, extensively investigated the banks, and only four bankers have been charged with libel fixing. You know, one gentleman called Tom Hayes, who is quite well known because he was the first one, and you know, he actually went to prison for 6 years, and he's been released in February 2021, so just recently. And he claims, of course, that he could not have been the only one in the know, which, you know, in view of the southern market, you think it might be right. Even filing for a review of this case as a miscarriage of justice. Yeah.
Now, the third novel, No Turning Back, I believe, delves deeper into this murky world and financial heart of terrorism. And it links a brutal murder with a UK bank in a Middle Eastern state. And the fourth book of the series, Spy Shadows, takes it still further with the involvement of MI6 and an emerging terror group. Crikey. No.
Yes, I mean, I think I like, in my novel, what I like to do is to not only look up for the financial sector, but as you quite rightly say, I like to follow the money. So, you know, in No Turning Back, you know, the third novel, what I also wanted to talk about is issues that cross boundaries with the financial sector, in particular whistleblowing, for example, which, you know, it's very prominent in the banking sector because there's so much sometimes to talk about. So I designed the novel around this. But, you know, there are other industries in which whistleblowing happens. And if your audience is ever interested in watching a fantastic film that deals with whistleblowing and the sometimes even threat to life that whistleblowers go through, there's a really good film called The Insider. It's a 1999 film, and it tells a true story of a scientist who blew the whistle on the large American tobacco companies. It stars Russell Crowe and Al Pacino. They were very worth watching. And then, of course, sorry, Scott, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, it's fair to say that all four books have received rave reviews. So I'm just wondering whether you wished you turned your attention to writing earlier.
Well, yes. I mean, certainly, you know, now, in retrospect, I thought I'd started a bit earlier on, but you know, I hesitated for a long time. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when you start writing, it's a challenge. You know, I was going to write in a language that is not my mother tongue, as you quite rightly say. 35 years in this country, certainly, but you know, there's a difference between being bilingual and writing fiction and finding a voice and your voice. So, yes, I felt very comfortable writing business English, but writing a novel, well, you know, I thought, you know, can I do it? You know, is it going to be possible? Is it going to happen? I've got also a lot of respect for authors and artists in general. So, you know, was I cut for it? And now, of course, I'm delighted. I've you know, made the decision, and I've got lots of, you know, good friends and lovely authors that backed me, and I thank them for that support and helping me in that leap of faith.
Do you find yourself thinking in French but writing in English, or do you think in English as well?
No, never. I mean, I never think in French these days. Right. I don't even dream in French. I mean, I think, after a while, you're completely immersed in a language.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't even, if I'm between two people, or, you know, people who are bilingual like me, we sometimes switch. We do that way, what they call franglais. It's quite funny.
Yes, yeah.
It's a bit of a mix of the two. So yes, you immerse yourself completely when you're in a country. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, you've just published another book, Blood Dragon. So I'm guessing that this is the start of a new series, because although you've got Nancy Wu in there as well, I'm assuming that Henry Crown may not be in this one.
That's absolutely right, Scott. Absolutely. I decided that it was maybe time for Nancy and the lovely DCI Paul to have a story of their own.
Mm.
When you write, of course, you know, you feel that your characters are growing and becoming a bit more important in their own right. So that's what prompted me to create this new series. It's a little bit more it's slightly different. It's more personal.
Mm.
It's more of a crime thriller. And I'm excited about that new development. And Blood Dragon has been well received as well. So cross fingers.
So what plans do you have for the future? More books maybe, or do you fancy breaking out into films or TV perhaps?
Well, I mean, of course, TV and film adaptation, it's a real dream come true for any author. And in particular with the latest series of Line of Duty, which I, of course, followed religiously like everybody else, and even recorded in order to watch again.
Mm.
Or indeed the amazing series called Bloodlands, which also is a series backed by Jen Mercurio. I can only dream of someone like Jen Mercurio to take interest in my books. Mercurio is really amazing. I mean, the way he plots the plot line, it keeps giving. His characters are incredible. I mean, yes, you're interested in them and you root for them, but you know, I thought I was going to have to have therapy after episode 5 when I thought Cade Fleming was going to be killed.
Sure.
But really, I mean, for him, the plot is relentless, and that's great suspense writing. Yeah.
So anyway, we can't finish without telling everybody where to get hold of these books.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a website, it's easy. It's at www.freddiepeters.com. So it's Freddie with I-E, not Y.
Yep.
freddiepeters.com. You can find the full details of the books on the site. It's really easy. You can click on the novels, and then you can be directed to the site where you buy them. E-books and paperbacks are both available.
Mm-hmm.
You can also, if you would like, join my book club. So it allows you to receive exclusive content, additional insight into the books, the characters, how I conceive the stories. And, you know, as I said, I do a lot of research before I write a book. So if you're interested in finding out about the true stories behind the books, then you'll have plenty to read there. You also can read the first 3 chapters of the books, so that, you know, how you have a bit of a taster before you purchase them. Of course, you'll be able to join my newsletter. I email people twice a month. I mean, I don't really want to clog anybody's inbox.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, you won't be inundated with my emails. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, thanks very much indeed for joining us today, Freddie. And I, for one, look forward to hearing news of any new books you decide to write. And I hope that you somehow manage to get TV coverage as well. I'm not quite sure how you'd even start that, but still.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be great. And, you know, if Jen Mercury is listening, get in touch. And if it happens, then it has happened first on Phoenix FM.
Well, okay. Well, we certainly hope to see you in person before too long, right here in the studio. But thanks very much for that now. And good luck with the new book and the new series.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for your audience, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Our pleasure.